Welcome to another episode of My Wake Up Call. This is the podcast where I get the excuse to actually contact thought leaders, and sometimes they actually agree to be on this show. And I like to bring you thought leaders who are incredibly thoughtful and duty-bound to make the world better. They have no say in it. It's their calling. They cannot not make the world better. I mean, it's just part of who they are. And today we got another one. Let me tell you a little bit about Samir Hasicha. He's a professor of technology and operations management and the Shell Fellow in business and environment at INSEAD, which is one of the largest business schools in the world, if not the largest. It's all over the place. He earned his PhD in operations management and a master's in management science from the Simon School of Business at the University of Rochester, and his bachelor in technology from the Indian Institute of Technology in Madras. He has a recent book out that called The Phoenix, Phoenix Encounter?
The Phoenix Encounter, that's right.
The Phoenix Encounter Method. The Phoenix Encounter Method, and I actually prepared for this podcast, which is something I usually don't do. And so I've checked out the book. I've checked out some of his videos in YouTube, and you should too, because my read on it is he basically said the world is going to not just disrupt you, it's going to destroy you. So you may as well do it to yourself. Get ahead of the curve because there's no avoiding it. And if you're a leader and your people are looking at you, they know that destruction is coming at you from all angles. And if instead of fearing it, you get ahead of the curve and you destroy your company. Now, many people won't destroy their company because they don't have a process. And Samir's going to talk about that. There's a big difference between a process and a framework. A framework, a lot of people smile and they say that's very interesting, but they need step-by-steps so they don't fall through the cracks, especially if you're inviting them to destroy their company so they can rise from the ashes. So welcome, Samir, and I can hardly wait to find out what we talk about.
Well, thanks a lot, Mark, and I appreciate you having me in this show. And to a large extent, as you put it, having a systematic way of thinking about things and doing it in a proactive manner is, listen, there's no silver bullet, but having a systematic way of things and doing it in a proactive manner gives leaders a chance, a fighting chance of making sure that they can reinvent their organizations, that they can reinvent their business, so much so that it is future-proof, it is future-ready, and setting themselves up for success in reinventing the next generation or the next version of their business. I mean, we've seen this time and again, right? Organizations which are amazing at one point in time, they go down, and they don't go down because they're not competent. They don't go down because they don't have good people working there. They go down because they end up doing the same things again and again. And we just know this. We know this over decades of really rigorous research that says that what made you successful in the past is not necessarily going to make you successful in the future. And so if we have to think about reinventing ourselves, we have to challenge ourselves. Now, the difficult part here, Mark, is how do you challenge yourself when you've learned things from the past? If you've learned from your experience of how to become good, how do you abandon it? How do you let go of that? And how do you justify letting go of that? Because that's exactly what made you successful. This is what we're trying to challenge. We're trying to create a process that can help you let go of that in a way that you don't get trapped by blinkered thinking. And our method and our book is all about that.
So I want to ask you a question. You've already triggered many things. Also for our listeners and viewers, if they see video clips that go up, I want to emphasize two words that Samir said, systematized and proactive. Because systematized, I think it means people feel they're not going to fall through the cracks. And when you give people stuff like just vision, mission, strategy, there's too much wiggle room between those words. People fall through the cracks. So I love the fact that you need to give people a systematized way, like Lego-like blocks, because if there's a crack between them, people will fall through them. And proactive, I think, allows people to be confident in you. There's few things that cause people to lose confidence when they see a leader who's reactive. But proactive is just sort of a wonderful thing. But I want to drill down into you, because you've been able to, and I want to know from your background what enabled you to do this, you've been able to let go of control without thinking it's the same as being out of control. You've been able to allow yourself to let go of control without the anxiety mounting that something awful is going to happen. And it sounds like that's part of your mission to show leaders that they can do it too. But what informed you about being able to let go of control, about being able to just destroy a past mindset that you had? Did you come to some realization, it's just not working? I can't go forward with this old stuff. I mean, is there a backstory?
Mark, it's interesting you go there, because now we're getting really personal, right? And I'm happy to share this, because it is an exciting journey. I have to be very, very honest with you. A lot of this is serendipity, right? Just pure luck. I just chanced upon these opportunities in life. And to give you a background, you know, growing up in India, very good academically, I went into one of the premier engineering institutes, did my engineering. Somewhere down the line, an academic advisor suggested that perhaps I should go to a business school, and perhaps he saw something in me. And not knowing anything better, I ended up in graduate school. But that's not where the story gets interesting. The story gets interesting after that. After I finished graduate school, and I was still doing very interesting research, which is combining economics and engineering in a field called operations management. Very, very, very interesting. And I liked it a lot. But I still felt somewhere down the line that I was just doing more of the same. I was walking through a traditional path. And I remember this desire in me that, you know, this research that I'm doing, what I'm studying, is it really going to make a difference? Is it going to change things? And that's when this whole serendipity or luck came in, and I ended up at INSEAD. Now, you know, not everybody knows about INSEAD, especially in the US, because, you know, we're outside of the US. But we are a global brand and an amazing school. And what INSEAD did was it exposed me to a way of thinking that I hadn't previously encountered, especially where I found that functional boundaries or disciplinary boundaries in education, which usually exist, you know, finance, accounting, marketing, operations. These are disciplines that sort of sit in silos in for good reasons or bad reasons. Luckily for me, INSEAD didn't have that. We didn't have this very siloed way of thinking. You know, there were colleagues who were all a part of INSEAD, and there were people from leadership. There were people from marketing. There were people from strategy, from organizational behavior. And we would all come together. We would eat lunch together. We would hang out. We would have coffees together. And many times the conversations was about, you know, what does it mean to think about the future of business, to think about the future of organizations? And what it turns out many times is the answer simply cannot be driven by one discipline or one school of thought. It invariably, and now even in hindsight, obviously, has to be a combination of multidisciplinary way of thinking. And what INSEAD did through my interactions with my colleagues is exposed me to that multidisciplinary way of thinking. That, Mark, to me was one of the biggest aha moments in my career, where I realized that if I have to talk about what do leaders of organizations need to do to reinvent their business, it needs to be cross-disciplinary. It cannot be looked at from one lens. Of course, individual lenses are important. I need a finance lens. I need an operations lens. I need a marketing lens. But at the end of the day, the leader needs to put all these lenses together, have a complete 360 view of the world and their business within that world, and then imagine where the world is going to be, and then imagine where their business is going to be. Which is why this book, and coming back to this book, is a multi-authored book. You know, I'm not the only one. I have three other colleagues, and the intersection between us, the commonality between us is a love and desire to think about the future and not get trapped by hindsight. And that's perhaps it. From a disciplinary point of view, we completely, even from a personality point of view, we're the four of us are completely different from each other. The only common thing to us, like I said, is our love for thinking about the future and how businesses can develop, and the game of cricket. For some very weird reason, all of us have a love of that game. That's the only common point about us. So long story short, what I'm trying to emphasize is that I sort of landed on this opportunity to explore a world different than what I had been trained for my entire formal education. And once I was able to see it, I was able to envision why this is very, very important. And in fact, it is the most crucial element of what it takes to actually think about the future, a multi-dimensional perspective. And that got me excited. And your words were to lose control and still have control was for me to abandon the shackles of my own discipline and try and start understanding what other fields, what other academic disciplines and practitioners have talked about, and then try and merge these things together to make a holistic view of how organizations should be managed and run.
So when I have guests on, you can't avoid my sometimes giving you insight into yourself. So are you open to that?
I am absolutely open to that. Would love it, actually.
So this is what I hear you saying. This is kind of what I do, and I seem to be getting away with it. What I hear you saying to me between the words is, when I landed at INSEAD, I met a group of people who were not afraid to be curious. In fact, they were drawn to it. And I suddenly felt free because I had grown up in disciplines who were afraid to be curious. Everything was confirmation bias. I felt it was really constricting. They were missing out on something. They were in denial. But, you know, I was in a minority. But then when I came to INSEAD, so this is also an advertisement for INSEAD. I was speaking to a group of entrepreneurs, and I said, you know, we can talk about people stuff, but none of you care about that. I think what you'd be more interested in is how to think like Jennifer. She's the only woman in the group because she thinks like Elon Musk and Steve Jobs. So I'd like to abandon talking about communication because none of you really care about that. You have HR, you have COOs, and here's how Jennifer thinks. And they're all looking at me like I'm crazy, which is partially true. I said, Jennifer sees the unknown as an adventure to be lived. And the rest of you see the unknown as a danger to be avoided. And she's always seen it that way. And she steps into the unknown. And because she's led by curiosity and a beginner's mind, she recognizes fresh new patterns and builds new businesses. And I said, is that right, Jennifer? She texts me and she says, you're going to coach me. So I'm coaching Jennifer. But can you resonate with any of that, that there is an adventure to be lived and, you know, you're trying to be empathic to those people that are stuck and scared, but things have changed. The world has destroyed the world as we know it, but there's a great opportunity if it doesn't scare you. So is any of what I just said resonate with you?
Mark, I mean, it's giving me goosebumps. I hope I'm allowed to say things like this, but I could not agree more with you. It not only resonates with me, it is one of the biggest epiphanies. And I hate to say this, this should not be an epiphany. We should all be living like that. But I have to admit and confess, it was an epiphany. It was constricting. We were scared of the unknowns and we wanted to be safe and wanted to carve out a path that is well understood. But as Jennifer said, or believes, or even enacts from what you're telling me, that's the exact opposite of what we have to be. I mean, the real fun is trying to explore something where it's not clear and obvious of what lies ahead. Mm-hmm. The irony is that that's our reality. So it's not even as if we have to be fringe elements and we are the weirdos who are trying to do this. That's actually the reality. The strange thing is the dire need to walk in a world of predictability is ironically the least available world, which is a predictable world. So it's not only adventurous, it's actually beneficial. As you said, there is opportunity sitting there, and it's the most available opportunity to dive into the uncertain world and actually extract some really interesting possibilities which were previously unimagined. And what better times in the world to do it than now, when we have never seen so much growth and technological development in the world before. Neither have we ever seen so much uncertainty. And in this particular times, the uncertainty is for an unfortunate reason, and a reason that, you know, we would all want to very quickly get out of. Nonetheless, that's our reality. You know, we can't change that reality. So what we need to do is to stand up to this and say, you know what? I agree and accept that the world is an extremely uncertain and getting more uncertain by the day. The question that I have in front of me as a leader is, am I willing to embrace it and leverage it, or am I going to fear it and ultimately succumb to it? And those two choices are in front of all of us.
So let me ask you, because you're preaching to the choir here, so I'm getting goosebumps myself. But as you try to introduce this to the world, I think we're kindred spirits, because I'm trying to introduce empathy to the world. It's something the world needs, but it doesn't want. And at least the people in power don't seem to want it. And it seems like you're doing a similar thing. And the rate limiting step is the fear of change, the rigidity. So how do you overcome it? How do you get them to be willing to embrace what you're talking about when it triggers fear all the way down to their core?
Mark, you have hit the nail on the head yet again. And I'm absolutely loving this conversation, by the way. You cannot. We cannot make people embrace it until and unless the epiphany is personal. Our method is not preaching in that sense, which is why we call it a method as opposed to a prescription. I don't have a prescription for anybody. If tomorrow any CEO comes and has a chat with me and says, Samir, what do I need to do? I'd say, I don't know. I really don't know. What I can do is, I have a method for you to come up with your own answer, for you to have your own epiphany, for you to then embrace it on your own. Because should we not do this, you would never buy into what I'm saying. It would be, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but this sounds a little too pie in the sky, science fiction kind of ideas. But the method is about, Mark, you embracing this on your own. Our method is about you as a leader. And I'm going to walk you through that method, and I'll guide you, but I won't fill in the blanks for you. I will guide you, but you will yourself need to imagine your own destruction, build your own burning platform. And only then, and necessarily only then, would you embrace this philosophy. Short of that, it would be words. There will be consultants that will come to you, but then it'll be business as usual on Monday morning, right? So the imagining your own destruction is a precursor to you embracing this philosophy, as opposed to getting a consultant to tell you what you should do, because that's not going to happen. So you really have to have your own epiphany, and our method helps you have that epiphany.
So people like you are much more influential than people than me. I mean, I have somewhat of a platform. I've written a bunch of books. I speak here and there, but you know, you're the real deal. So are you open to my giving you a tip to how to get them to lower their guard?
Mark, in if you only allow me to say that I believe people like you and me are very complementary to each other. I think we play a very important role together. And I know your modesty is flowing out, but I personally believe that when 1 + 1 is greater than 2 here, and I think that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to play together so that together we make more than what impact you and I would have had individually. So yes, I'm very open to that after that precursor.
Okay. So here's a suggestion because what I've discovered is I actually did a presentation for a year and a half where I played Steve Jobs coming back from the dead. And the main purpose of it, and I had the turtleneck and the glasses, but the main purpose of it was to tee up a formula that he lived by and recreates inside his customers. And the formula is, whoa, wow, yes. What is it that your customer can see, hear, or read that causes them to go, whoa, I can't believe what I just saw, heard, or read? So it's disruptive to their pattern. Wow, that's unbelievable, astonishing, amazing. This is too good not to use. I don't know how to use it. Yes, I'm going to use it. And when I played him, I recreated, there's a dramatization of his discovering the graphical user interface at Xerox PARC. Yeah. And when you see the video of it, you see the whoa, wow, yes. As soon as he sees it, he talks to Wozniak. Wozniak says, they're not going back from this. So it's all that. So I'm giving you a whoa, wow, yes to use with your audience. What? Here's the suggestion, and tell me if you can use it. I think a good, because you have a message, this book has a message that is critical to the future. But if you don't get people to embrace it because they're resisting it, they're going to nod from the neck up and do the same thing they always do. Mm-hmm. So the suggestion would be, and you could do it, whether it's a Zoom call or whatever, you ask them, and if you did this live, what you'd say is, raise your hand if you have had the experience where as right as you thought you were is as wrong as you turned out to be. Where as right as you thought you were is as wrong as you turned out to be, and it cost you a marriage, it cost you a friendship, it cost you a business, it cost you a lot. So, and in the chat box, just say, if you've had that experience, just say yes. And you can say no if you haven't had that experience. Mm-hmm. But what will happen is in the chat box, as the yeses accumulate, there will be a flex in the room of mm-hmm. people feeling less alone in having done that. Mm-hmm. And as they flex into that, they're going to have a new experience. And the experience is that of bonding from a vulnerability, which in itself is going to be different than what they experience from a lecture. Make any sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And you know, call it dissonance, call it collective wisdom, call it, you know, together in the trenches. I could not agree more with you yet again. Just to exemplify this a little bit, Mark, I think you'll find this story fascinating. Many, 3 or 4 years ago, even before we started writing this book, I used to do a session, which is, you know, when I would teach senior executives at INSEAD, which is somewhat one of the reasons why this book came about. And I specialize in technology. I would speak a lot about technology and how technology is disrupting the world. And what I would do is, Mark, I would run a workshop rather than teaching a class. I never called my sessions a class. I always said it's a workshop. It's a conversation. And I would have senior executives, seasoned executives, come into my workshop in the morning. And I would tell them, you know, before we get started, why don't you write down for your organization? And many of them would belong to the same organization, right? Because you have companies who send executives all from the same firm, right? Why don't you write down what do you think are the 3 to 6 most important priorities for your business going forward? Just write it down on a piece of paper, right? Take some time to think about it. Write it down. And Mark, they would write it down, right? Everybody would have a sense of, you know, what are the most important things for our organization, for our business. And then I would run this workshop. I would run the Phoenix Encounter method, you know, and we've iterated that method over the years, but in its original form, I would run the method with them. At the end of the day, or at the end of 2 days, depending on how long our intervention was, we would do the workshop. And right at the end, I would say, listen, don't look at what you wrote right at the beginning when we first met. Now that we've done with this workshop, can you go back and write down what should be your 3 to 6 priorities for your organization going forward? Mark, you should not be surprised based on what you've been telling me. Those 3 to 6 priorities had nothing to do with what they wrote down the first minute they met me. And I didn't ask them to change it. I didn't tell them what those priorities were. I didn't even take a peek at them. This is all on their own in a matter of a day or 2 days. So it was the self-realization and the realization as a group, the realization amongst each others. And of course, in an education environment, it's a safe environment. It's an environment where it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to realize that I have no idea what I was thinking on Monday morning when I started this. But by Wednesday evening, I know that, you know, my head was in the sand and I need to completely rethink what the business is and what our priorities should be. That moment is not only an awakening, it is also a very emotional moment for many of the seasoned leaders. They come up to me and often say, this has been insightful, but this has also been a roller coaster, an emotional roller coaster of self-realization that how blinkered my thinking was, how I was anchored and shackled by incremental. Of course, what I wrote down on Monday morning when we first met was not bad, but it was incremental. It was doing more of the same, perhaps improving it here and there. But you've helped me change my mind. So to exemplify your point, and I value the feedback you're giving, and I would love to do something like this, and I in fact will do it, Mark, if you don't mind, is actually get that sense of enlightenment from people to just come up and say, you know what, we've been wrong before completely many times. And if we don't break the shackles, break the blinkered thinking, we may very well be wrong again. So perhaps it's good time now. The best time to do this was yesterday. The second best time to do this is today. And we're gonna do this today. We're gonna break these shackles and try thinking of completely reinventing our business. And as a result, reinventing ourselves. And the realization that we were wrong in the past would play an instrumental role in, as you said, allowing us to make that attitude or the mindset leap.
So can I give you another tip? I'm sorry, I just do this all the time.
Are you kidding me? I'm making notes here.
Okay, well, no, I'm gonna send you the video.
Brilliant.
I'm going to give you another tip to build on, because this is the synergy between us. I'm going to give you a tip that's going to make you cry and them cry after I give you this tip. So you go through the exercise, you get to the end, and you say, I have a confession to make. when we started out, you know, my initial feeling was that you were resistant to change. But what I realize is none of you are resistant to change. What all of you are locked in a rigid silo of non-rational, non-functional self-preservation. Non-rational meaning what you're doing isn't going to help you into the future, even help you survive. It's non-functional. But you're doing it because it's self-preservation, and it's self-preservation because your mind is, like all of our minds, a silo of competence equals control, and anything outside it is just scary. And I'm sharing that with you because I feel the pain of you being locked into that, because I've been locked into that in my life. It's painful. Mm-hmm. And what I'm hoping we have discovered is it's safe to go outside that. Mm-hmm. We just did it together. We went outside that and you didn't fall apart. Mm-hmm. you know, and the competence, confidence, control thing, you didn't fall apart. And not only that, I think you're feeling some emotion because you're actually feeling the relief because there's a part of you that knows that what I'm saying is true, that the rigidity is limiting. And we've done this together. And I just wanted to share that with you because I could see the pain of you being good people and good leaders, but having this fear lock you into this silo. I mean, one next to each other, you were like these silos, and together we've been able to see that you can break free of that.
Mm-hmm. And imagine the confidence that this builds, as opposed to the confidence that the silos and the controls builds.
Totally.
Right? I mean, this is Mark, in the book we call this the Phoenix attitude. That's the name we gave this, because the phoenix, as the analogy, is you know, the bird is going to rise from the ashes, right? And just imagine the exuberance that a leader has. I know exactly what you're saying. I can envision it. The exuberance that a leader has when they are able to realize that they are not bounded, that what they can achieve is not predestined, that there is no limit to the possibilities, that unimaginable configurations and permutations are possible if they abandon the silo thinking that you said. And we can give them the confidence. We can make them believe in this because it is believable. And, you know, Mark, we've done this method with, you know, we've been fortunate, again, thanks to our career choices that we made. We've managed to execute this method with more than 1,500 executives in the last few years. And I'm talking about senior executives, right? Business leaders from all industries, all geographies, all sorts of environments. I have seen this, Mark. I have seen this in person. And the next time I'm able to do this, I thank you for your you know, the insights that you're giving me, because I'm going to double down on this personal message. And I think I need to do this. I need to let them know that this is going to free you in a way that will allow you to reach the boundaries that previously were unimaginable. And I think that attitude, that mindset is critical. And liberating. I mean, just imagining doing that is right now liberating me. It's just exciting me. Like, I want to do this. I want to do this workshop as soon as we can. I mean, right now, obviously, because of the way the world is, we are restricted in our ability to interact with executives. But I can't wait to do that, because you're absolutely right. This is, it allows people to explore something that previously was not within their imagination. And I think that is very empowering.
So here's my last insight to you, because we've developed a relationship, and who knows, I think we're going to follow up on this. You're an incredibly earnest, decent, people can trust you to never hurt them kind of person, but you're emotionally,
thank you, Mark.
But you're emotionally shy, and you default to your analytical background. And what I've been bathing you in is what we call, experience near language, which people lean into, but people who are emotionally shy often default to experience distant language, which is conceptual. And I come from the experience near side of the tracks, because I was a suicide specialist for 30 years and none of my patients killed themselves. And I had to abandon experience distant language because they were running out of time. So I had to find out an experience near language that they could lean into and away from killing themselves. Mm-hmm. And so so I appreciate that you've been open to this unsolicited input, but you're on a path and journey and purpose that the world needs immediately. And it would be my pleasure to help you in any way have that impact.
Mark, the world needs. Please go ahead.
No, I'm done, and we're running out of time. I'm going into my next interview. So,
But no, but I was just to, I know we're running out of time, but I genuinely appreciate what you're saying. And I do agree with you. And I take this feedback really, really positively, because I think it's very, very important, because I've seen this, and my analytical side actually, as you're saying this, is processing that information and saying, yes, I've seen it. I've seen the emotional reaction in people, and they want to lean in, they want to explore, they want to rediscover not only their business, but also themselves along with it. And the Phoenix Encounter allows them to do that. And the method is, like you said, it's a trustworthy, systematic process to literally guide people to be able to do that. So I completely agree with you, and I'm going to double down on what you're saying, because I want to be able to do that, because I think that's where the difference is made.
And something I'll tell you, which I told my last mentor, Warren Bennis, before he died, because I said to him, you know, one of the reasons, I said, people love you, people respect you, but they love you more than they respect you, because they can trust you to not hurt them, because you are more focused on helping people than being right. Mm-hmm. And that's you too, Samir.
I love that.
You are more focused on helping people than being right. You think you've discovered a method, but it's not just the coincidence that people lean into you and listen to you, because what they pick up is he's not going to do a bait and switch. He really cares. And that's and that's why I want you to overcome this emotional shyness so it can shine through. It needs to
Mark,
shine through.
I appreciate your words, and they actually mean a lot to me. So I'm sincerely thankful for that.
Oh, good. So tell people where they can find you, and then you know we'll continue this offline.
Mark, absolutely. So first of all, thanks a lot. I really appreciate this conversation. It was a great experience for me to just hear your thoughts, and I appreciate you sharing your insights. And where they can find me is actually quite easy. I'm, you know, Samir Hasija, luckily, is one of those few names where if you search me online, I'll be the only person who shows up. So it's actually quite easy. But I'm available at samirhasija.com. The book is available on Amazon. And the phoenixencountermethod.com is our website. And you can go on INSEAD's website and search for me. You should be able to get a lot of information about me, the book. And what is most interesting to me, Mark, as you said, is to be able to interact with people and hear their journey as they think about their own Phoenix resurrection. I would love to hear from your audience, from anybody who's listening. So just drop me an email, samir.hasija@INSEAD.edu. It's difficult to remember this, but if you go on INSEAD's website, it's very easy to find my email address, LinkedIn, Twitter, at Samir Hasija. Either way, I'm very happy to hear from folks. And I personally take out time to get back to folks, because that makes me extremely excited. And I love the learnings that I get from it.
And because you care.
Because I care. I absolutely care.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for accepting some of the observations. I don't always give them out, but when I find someone who really cares about the world, and they have no choice but to care about the world, any way that I can help them get their message across so that people lean into it, I'm going to do. So I appreciate your being open to this being an unusual interview, and to our listeners, I think you need to find out more about the Phoenix Encounter Method, but even more about Samir. We need leaders. We need bright lights who don't disappoint us as people, and Samir is one of those. So thank you for listening in to another episode of my Wake Up Call, and remember, wake-up calls always happen. We don't always wake up, but don't beat up on yourself. There'll be another one, and sooner or later, you'll wake up. And thanks again for listening in. And until next time, this is Dr. Mark Goulston saying, take care of yourself and your families.